again, I want to say thanks very much for having me here. And we're here in John's Gospel for the next 2 weeks, and I hope you come back next week to see the second installment. A bit about myself, I'm a really avid cyclist. I'm a part of a cycling club. We go for long rides on Saturday. And I think the technical term for that is a manmil, a middle-aged man in Lycra. And I really enjoy cycling at the countryside, going to country lanes. And one of the best bits is to meet other cyclists like myself. And over the past few years, I've really gotten to know this chap called Dan, and we've got along really well. And at the start of this year, I said, I want to commit to asking Dan to read the Bible with me. So it was New Year's Day, we went out ride together. We're on this country lane, no cars, we were cycling side by side to one another, and we're having a good conversation. It was the perfect time to pop the question. And then when I opened my mouth, there were no words that came out. I said, okay, we'll try again. And we went to a different lane, again, really nice roads, having a good conversation. I said, okay, this is the moment to ask him. I opened my mouth, and again, no words came out. And to tell you the truth, I was just a bit fearful, a bit awkward, a bit worried of what he would think of me. And maybe you've been in a similar situation before. I don't mean wearing Lycra on a bicycle, but maybe you needed to be bold about speaking publicly about your faith in Jesus, in your office, with your friends, or your family. And so here's the question. In those moments of fear, what do we need to know in order to move from fearfulness to boldness? What do we need to know to take courage and be bold? I want to suggest that we are in a period where much Christian courage and boldness is needed. I'm sure many of you are aware of the census that was published last year. In the UK, no longer is Christianity the majority religion. Or you think about your office, perhaps it's getting a bit harder to be bold for Jesus, to speak about your faith, worried about the implications of being upfront. And also within the church, the established church, these days is less and less distinguishable from society. So the need for courage, for boldness, is especially pressing in our time. So how do we move from fearfulness to boldness? Well, the next 2 weeks, we are in the upper room, and Jesus, well, he will give us the answer. Well, three bits of context to know about the upper room. You've got them there on your handout. The first context is this. Jesus, he's about to go back to his Father. It's his imminent departure. He's about to tell his disciples that he's leaving them and he's going back to his Father's side. And in this conversation, he explains why he needs to go. The second thing to notice is that there is a trial that's going on in John's Gospel. When Tom was reading the passage, do you notice there was language from a trial being used? I look at verse 26. But when the Helper comes, he will bear witness about me. Verse 27, you also will bear witness. A witness is language from the trial. Also in verse 8, when he comes, he will convict the world concerning sin, righteousness, and judgment. Witness, righteousness, judgment, and conviction. And those are all language used in a trial. So there's a big trial that's going on in John. And you might be asking, what is being decided? What is the case being presented? And the issue on the table is all about the identity of Jesus. Is Jesus the Son of God? Third bit of context. Well, think about the emotions in the room. The upper room, maybe a bit like this, quite a cozy gathering. Jesus and his 11 disciples. And he tells them that he's leaving them. And imagine being one of the disciples. You risk all of your life for him. Your family, you've left them. Your friends, your society, you left them to follow this man. And now he says, I'm leaving. How would you feel? Fear, anxiety, and surely a bit worried about your future. And so this is the conversation that Jesus speaks to them, that helps them to move from 11 frightened disciples to the movement that changed the course of history. So what was it that Jesus said to move them from fearfulness to boldness? And well, the answer that Jesus gives us today is that we all need to grasp, to understand, to perceive, to grasp the moment that we are in. Here's a key verse for our passage today, verse 26. But when the Helper comes, who I will send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth, who proceeds from the Father, he will bear witness about me, and you also will bear witness, because you have been with me from the beginning. Well, the first thing we need to grasp is that we are in the era, in the age of the Spirit and the vindication of the Son. Well, look at verse 7. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the Helper will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you. Well, Jesus is leaving his disciples, but he tells them, it's to your advantage that I go. It's to your advantage because I'll send you the Spirit. And you might think that's quite surprising. Jesus says it's better for him to not be with his disciples. It's better for him to be away from them because he will send them the Spirit. And why is that so? Look down to verse 8. Because when he comes, when the Spirit comes, he will convict the world concerning sin, righteousness, and judgment. Well, it's something about the fact that the Spirit comes that will convict the world of sin, righteousness, and judgment. I wonder what you think those words mean, convicting the world with sin, righteousness, and judgment. And some suggest that the conviction that the Spirit is doing is something subjective in a person. You subjectively feel a sense of conviction, of guilt and regret and the need for forgiveness. And that's certainly true. The Spirit does do that. But I want to suggest that Jesus is saying something different here at this moment. And remember the context? We are in a trial. And the word conviction is a legal term. And so there's something about sending the Spirit that becomes the decisive moment in the trial, to prove that Jesus was right. So rather than a subjective internal experience, it is an objective claim about who Jesus is. Remember the issue, is Jesus really the Son of God? And so the moment that Jesus ascends to his Father's side and he sends the Spirit, well, that proves that he is the Son of God. Well, forgive this really silly illustration. 5th of November, or fireworks. Personally, I'm not a huge fan, you might be. But one of the fireworks, which I think is really impressive, is what I call the gold dust fireworks. You know, the one that creates a loud bang, and it's like gold dust coming down from the sky. I think that's the most impressive. And how do you know that the rocket has gone up to the sky? The moment the rocket goes up, you see gold dust coming down, you know the rocket has ascended up high. And it's the same with Jesus. When you see the Spirit coming down, you know that he's ascended to his Father's side. And so historically, this has happened on the day of Pentecost, where Jesus went up to his Father's right hand and he poured out his Spirit. And that very moment vindicated him as the Son of God. And that explains, I think, what verse 9 to 10 are saying. I look at verse 9. When he comes, he will convict the world concerning sin, righteousness, and judgment. Concerning sin, because they do not believe in me. You see, the sending of the Spirit will convict the world concerning sin. And not any sin, but a sin about not believing that Jesus was the Son of God. How about verse 10? He will convict the world concerning righteousness, because I go to the Father, and you see me no longer. What does righteousness mean? I don't think it means imputed righteousness, but that Jesus was right. He was right about himself. He really did come to God from God, and he has gone back to his Father's side. And lastly, verse verse 11, concerning judgment, because the ruler of the world is judged. The judgment there is not final judgment, I don't think, but it's a present judgment that the Son of God has poured out His Spirit, and He has begun the end game for the ruler of the world, for Satan. The moment the Spirit is poured out, Satan's reign is over. And so Jesus says, well, it's to your advantage. It's to your advantage that I go away. The verdict is overturned. The guilty verdict declared on the world. Jesus was and is right about Himself. He came from the Father and went back to His Father's side, and He has poured out the Spirit. And so He is the Son of God. And so this is the moment we are in, the moment where the Spirit has been poured out and the Son of God is vindicated. You see, long ago, before God sent His Son, the prophets spoke of a future time where God, He will pour out His Spirit on all flesh. And the people of old, they were waiting in great anticipation of that great day. But we are not in that day. We are in a new day where the Spirit has been poured out, where the Son of God is sitting at the Father's right hand. You know, there was a moment in history where the Son of God, He walked the earth, and there was real confusion about who He was. The people back then, they said, who is this man? Is he a Samaritan? Does he have a demon? And can you imagine God Himself standing in front of them? And what did they do? They picked up stones to kill Him. And there was confusion about the man, Jesus. But we are not in that day. You see, we are in the day where it's absolutely clear. Jesus is the Son of God. He is poured out His Spirit, and He's at His Father's right hand. You see, we are in the era of the Spirit and the vindication of the Son of God. I want to say to you, if you're not a Christian and you are looking into things today, well, I don't mean to be presumptuous, but in one sense, you know, whether you believe or you don't believe, well, it doesn't change the undeniable fact of history. Jesus is the Son of God, and He has proven that historically by pouring out the Spirit. And so we need to grasp that this is the era that we live in, the era of the Spirit and of the vindication of the Son of God. Well, that was a decisive moment in history 2,000 years ago. The Spirit's been poured out. But how does that impact us today? Look down to verse 26 again. But when the Helper comes, whom I will send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth, who proceeds from the Father, He will bear witness about Me. And you also will bear witness, because you have been with Me from the beginning. Well, if you're following the handout, we're in our second point. We are in the era of witness and truth. Look down to verse 12. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. When the Spirit of truth comes, He will guide you into all the truth. For He will not speak of His own authority, but whatever He hears, He will speak. And He will declare to you things that are to come. He will glorify Me, for He will take what is Mine and declare it to you. All that the Father has is Mine. Therefore I said, He will take what is Mine and declare it to you. It's worth being absolutely clear on the onset that the Spirit will guide you to all truth. The you there, unfortunately, doesn't refer to you or to me. It refers to the disciples. They were there with Him from the beginning. And so Jesus is speaking specifically about the disciples. But what does He mean by He will declare to you all the truth? Now, what is all the truth? I look down there in verse 13. When the Spirit of truth comes, He will guide you into all the truth. For He will not speak on His own authority, but whatever He hears, He will speak. So notice the first bit of what the truth means is what the Spirit hears from the Son, He will speak to the apostles. First part of the truth, it is the words from the Son, spoken from the Son to the Spirit and to his apostles. But also, in verse 13, he will declare to you the things that are to come. What are the things that are to come? Well, I want to suggest it's the actions of the Son. Because after what happens in this moment, Jesus will go to his death, his resurrection, his ascension back to the Father. The things that are to come is the actions of the Son. So what is all the truth? It's both his words, the Son's words, and his actions. So the Bible, or the Gospels, well, it contains all the truth about the Son. And just as a side, I think this is why Christians believe that the Bible is sufficient. Not sufficient because it covers everything in life. It's not a comprehensive manual for every issue in life. It doesn't give you dating tips. Maybe it does, actually. But it gives you sufficient, all you need to know about the Son. And if Jesus is sufficient, the Bible is sufficient. And it's also why we believe that the Bible is not an authority, but the authority. Because if Jesus is the one in charge, and the Bible contains all the truth about Jesus, therefore, the Bible is the authority. And so John's Gospel, the Gospel that we have, the Bible contains all the truth of the Son, and it will be an ongoing witness to an unbelieving world. Again, back in the Old Testament, the prophets, they look forward to a day in the future, where the knowledge of God will cover the waters and the face of the earth. They long for a day where the nations would turn from the idols to worship the one true God. And think of this country before the witness broke forth. We were in a time of darkness. It was a day of darkness. We were in complete darkness. People in this country worshipping idols, wooden idols, stone idols, creatures, trees, rocks, lightning, and stars. And then what happened? Well, the witness of Jesus broke forth into this country, and we turned from our idols, worshipping these wooden idols, to recognize the one true God. You see, we are not in the day of darkness. We are in the time of light. The witness of Jesus, the truth, is shining like the bright midday sun. And so we need to grasp that this is the moment that we are in. It is the era of witness and truth, where the truth about Jesus is breaking across all over the world, where people in Southeast Asia, in the West, people turning from the idols to worship the one true God. This is the era that we live in, not in a moment of darkness, but in a moment of light. You see, the first stage, the rocket has gone up, and the fireworks have come down. And the fireworks has hit the ground, and it's spreading like wildfire all across the earth. And so that's what we need to know. See, to move from fearfulness to boldness, to really grasp the moment we are in. We are in the era of the Spirit. The Son has returned to the Father's side. He has poured his Spirit out. We are in the era of witness and truth. The apostolic witness going around all across the world. So friends, let me encourage you to take courage and have boldness. As you go back to the office, think about the moment you're in. You're in the era of truth, that the Son of God is sitting at his Father's right hand. And so, as we try to advance the gospel in a workplace, God will work through individual Christians like you and myself. Each and every one of us needs to be bold and have courage. And so as we have courage, well, it will help us in our own personal weakness. You know, back in my cycle ride with my friend Dave, on the third try, I said, well, Joel, you need to stop being a wuss and you really need to pop the question. So there was another lane that we were in, nice country roads again, no cars. And I said, okay, I've got to ask the question. I said, hey Dan, you know, we've been friends for the past 2 years. There's one thing I really love to do with you is to read the Bible together. And Dan said, that sounds really lovely. which I think in British speak means that's terrible. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Jesus, he's the Son of God. We are in the age of the Spirit and age of witness and truth. So why don't I pray that we'll all have boldness and courage. Father, we do pray so much that you help us to truly grasp the moment we are in. And as a result, we will take courage and have real boldness that Jesus is the Son of God. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.